Major funding for Soundings comes from the A.J. Fletcher Foundation and from the National Endowment for the Humanities. From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, a weekly public affairs series featuring scholars and visitors at the center. The National Humanities Center is an independent, nonprofit institute which encourages excellence in scholarship and seeks to affirm the importance of the humanities in American life.
No, I think what he's trying to do there is to show the absurdity of human nature.
Huh.
And that is connected with depression, because the depressive has one advantage over the more optimistic, and that is to try to reach the very depths of the human soul.
Uh-huh.
And our imperfectibility is something that amuses as well as, it's something that we lament as well as celebrate, in a sense.
The Percy legend, Depression, Honor, and Creativity in a Southern Family, this week on Soundings. My guest is Bertram Wyatt Brown of the University of Florida. Bert Wyatt Brown's most recent book is Yankee Saints and Sinners, published in 1985. During his fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, he's at work on a project entitled The Percy Legend, Depression, Honor, and Creativity in a Southern Family. Here is Bert Wyatt Brown.
First of all, I should say something about the Percy family. They're one of the most unique families, I think, in American history. One could turn to New England and find a comparable family in the Adamses, with their presidents and then their literary side with Henry Adams and Brooks Adams. The Percys, though, worked in the other direction, in a sense. They began as very obscure people, but extremely wealthy, but they certainly had no national or even regional reputation. But in recent years, they have emerged as one of the leading families, I think, in Mississippi. And, of course, Walker Percy is a nationally known author who's written a succession of profound, comic, sad novels. In a sense, they have emerged as one of the leading families in the South.
All right. Now, you are not looking exclusively, though, at Walker Percy. What you're doing is looking at the antecedents to Walker. You're kind of doing a genealogy, are you not?
That's right. It is a genealogical study. It starts with 1775, when the first Percy appeared in Louisiana, which was then British West Florida. He married extremely well. He found a young Virginia bride who had lots of acres of land and slaves, and pretty soon he had developed himself into one of the leading planters of Natchez, Mississippi.
All right, now this would have been in the 18th century.
This is the 18th century. He never was actually an American, because British West Florida...
Well, there was no America.
Well, there was, of course...
not quite.
Right. Mississippi, that part of Mississippi did not become part of the United States till 1798.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, Charles had a very serious genetic problem. I think it was probably genetic. Depression. And he committed suicide in 1794.
And that, in a way, set a kind of pattern here.
That's right. This is one of the interesting aspects of the family, because on the one side, you have a remarkable succession of achievements and successes, generation after generation. There are not many families in America that could boast of so many prominent people over so long a period of time. But on the other hand, there is also this other aspect of genetic depression. And I want to stress that it's genetic in a sense, because we have a sense of depression or suicide as being a moral stigma.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think that's at all fair. Of course, there are psychological aspects to it, and in a sense, I suppose, you could say that one is always responsible for one's behavior. But if there's something wrong with the blood chemistry or the brain chemistry, it's a kind of a mental handicap, in a way.
All right. Now, Bert Wyatt Brown, let's be fair to you and to our topic here. You're a historian and not a physician. How do you figure out what the sort of genetic element here? How do you document this this claim that you're making?
That's an excellent question. And, of course, I haven't exhumed any bodies to get DNA readings on the bones or something of this sort. Nothing of that kind. But I don't think that when you have a pattern of depression that runs through one generation after another, that you can claim that this is entirely psychological. There's got to be another factor. And it just stands to reason. And this is not just my opinion. It's what I think geneticists and psychotherapists are willing to recognize now that we know much more. I mean, there's actually now, I think, a gene that has been identified as the one that carries the bipolar depression, which was, in some cases, the form that the Percys had.
Now you say had.
That's right. I don't think it's so evident in the present generation. I think that finally, perhaps that element has disappeared. Heaven knows this is mysterious as to why it comes in the first place and why it may disappear in a second. But for example, I don't think that Walker Percy himself carries that gene. I think that unfortunately and very tragically, both his father and his grandfather ended their own lives. And I think that this, of course, would have an impact upon him as a literary artist and as a human being.
Bert White Brown, let me stop you for a moment. You've been talking about Walker Percy and depression. What does all that have to do with creativity?
Well, I think that it has a great deal to do with it, and one can make about three points regarding it. First of all, I think the first thing is the question of the fictive personality. This is a psychological construction that I think helps to explain the relationship between depression and creativity.
This is what the novelist does.
Right. And this is what psychologists, psychoanalysts, and writers themselves, I think, understand. That is, it's a retreat from unhappiness into the realm of fantasy. It's to create a new personality for the writer in order to escape from the depression that he feels. A second point is how that works into the writing itself. Very often it leads to very strong metaphors about depression, about the malady.
You mean metaphors that run through the book?
That's right. Well, I think, for example, of Sylvia Plath, who talked about depression as the black demon of negation. And so much of her writing is about her own illness. Now, that isn't always, of course, the case. But what I found was very interesting is that Henry James, who also suffered from depression, talks about this in The Beast in the Jungle, one of his short stories. And he refers to the crouching beast, for example. It's a wonderful metaphor, and it's so curious because, after all, depression is about the negation of feeling, the absence of feeling, and yet it is given this positive character.
It stimulates something.
Right. It becomes a monster that invades you. It's outside the self, but suddenly you feel as if you are being taken over by some alien spirit. And that's the way very often it is portrayed. Edward Lear called it the morbids. And Winston Churchill, for example, called it the black dog. And I think that that helps to dramatize and perhaps even inspire the writing itself.
Now, you mentioned several other points here.
Right. Another point is I think that the depression leads one to a sense of openness toward feelings. Feelings that the normal person might have casually, but which have an intensity in a depressive, which help him to understand moods of anger, grief, loneliness, problems of sexual identity, introspectiveness, passivity, all of the sort of negatives of the human soul, and then sometimes a liberation. One can see writing itself as being a celebration away from depression, so that there, of course, is happiness too. And I think that it also can help to alert the writer to the feelings of the opposite sex. That is, a writer, of course, has to write about people. And if he's a man, he's going to write perhaps more vividly about male feelings. At the same time, there is a part of everybody which is, as Jung says, the opposite sex. And I think that helps to alert the writer to this other side of human experience.
Well, what's to prevent you, Bert White Brown, from simply calling the novels of Walker Percy autobiography and letting it go at that? How do you make this difference between fact, fiction, imagination, reality, the life and the work?
Well, I believe that Walker Percy is perhaps less autobiographical than some other members of his own family who also wrote. For example, Will Percy wrote Lanterns on the Levee, which is semi-fiction. He builds a character of himself and of his family members, which is utterly memorable and had a tremendous impact upon Walker Percy when he was doing his own writing. But it is largely based upon autobiography and the history of the family. Walker Percy does not do that. There are traces of his own life and of his own experiences, especially in the question of suicide of fathers, which run through several of his novels. But basically, he does not rely upon that. There is this idea of the fictive personality, I think, which helps us to understand why one doesn't just write about oneself. Uh-huh. You're looking for becoming a hero and or perhaps even a villain, exploring your own negative factors. But you create a new character.
Well, now very briefly, Bert Wyatt Brown, tell me, does Walker Percy himself talk about these things? I mean, do you have recourse to specific documents where he's outside of himself as a novelist, so to speak?
Well, he is rather private about these matters, and I think legitimately so. Most writers don't tell you everything that might interfere with the appreciation of the literature itself. No, I don't think that probably applies.
All right. Now, what does all of this have to do with the notion of Southern culture and Southern honor? It's one thing to say, here is a discernible pattern. Let's hope that it has ended or suspended itself temporarily. My question is a sort of an impertinence. Mm-hmm. Where do you take this as you look at the Percy family?
Well, that's something of a complicated question since I'm still in the writing stage. But I think that there is a connection between the concept of honor, which was really almost synonymous with Southern culture, and this issue of depression. Now, what other region in America has suffered as many tragedies as the South has? Losing a major catastrophic war, and then the poverty, the demoralization of the total culture, in a sense, after the Civil War.
William Styron has suggested, by analogous logic, that what happened in the Holocaust has its correspondence in the South, in the Civil War.
Well, I think there's something to be said for that. Not that the Southerners in the late 19th century were quite aware of this problem, but I have read diaries and accounts of attempts to escape by going off and hunting or drinking or whatever, trying to escape from some of the realities of their existence. I mean, when a social class as the as prominent as the planter class was, lose all of their resources, or very many of them, and perhaps they have land left, but no labor, not in the form of slavery anymore, it's going to have two effects. One is perhaps overwork, an attempt to reconstruct the family destiny and reconstruct the power that had once existed. Or the other hand is to take it easy and just simply drink yourself to death.
Yeah, well, you bring to mind in one sentence there, Erskine Caldwell and William Faulkner all at the same time. Uh-huh. What you're suggesting here, Bert Wyatt Brown, is a sort of a cultural imprint, a correspondence between the public and the private. Is that going too far?
I think that's probably true. In the Percy's case, the effort was overwork, which is sometimes a form of masked depression, as the analysts might call it.
Oh yeah, busy, 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 and
that's right.
Denial,
so you don't have
all of that.
Right, you're denying the things that are really bothering you the most by plunging yourself into work. And that was certainly true for one of the more important Percys in the late 19th century, William Alexander Percy, who was known as the Gray Eagle. He helped to overthrow Republican Reconstruction and kicked out Adelbert Ames, the Republican governor, and he was the Speaker of the House of Representatives at that time. He went on to develop the Delta as president of the Levee Board, and was very much engaged in all of the politics of the times. He was definitely going to become a governor had he lived so long. But unfortunately, Percy's not only had the problem of depression, but also early death. The male line had an average age of 49.
Now, wait, you mean inexplicable, it just happened, or
it's,
what?
It's, again, one of these mysteries. I can't really explain it. One of the curious things about it is that it makes it so tantalizing, but I can't prove it, is that the Earls of Northumberland, who are all Percys, of course, Harry Hotspur is the most famous of the lot, but...
We're moving all the way back into the Renaissance.
Wherever Charles Percy came from,
yeah.
he made a claim, in a sense, that he was related to the Earls of Northumberland. Well, it happens that the Earls of Northumberland suffered from depression, and apparently that is true even into the 20th century, but also died early. And going back to 1066, one of the genealogists of the family discovered that the average age at death of the leading members of the family was 49.
Tell me about how you were going about this project, looking at the Percy family, Southern culture, the ethics of honor, mental anguish. Are you talking to the members of the family? Are they helping you? Are you fighting a battle as a scholar and putting this all together? What?
Well, since most of the book is really about the 18th and 19th centuries, I'm not. I think I know much more about the family than they do themselves, because I've found ancillary collections and various archives of relatives that they didn't even know they had. For example, there were three 19th century Percy novelists, and I asked Walker if he'd ever heard of them: Catherine Ann Warfield, Sarah Dorsey, and Eleanor Percy Lee.
And he didn't know that he had these antecedents.
He had no idea.
Oh,
and
what's
really fascinating is that they were very conscious of this problem of depression in the family.
Uh-huh.
And between them, they all wrote 15 novels and two books of poetry and a biography and so on. So they're very prolific writers, but they were experienced with this problem of depression in their own lives and in their previous ancestors. And one of them wrote a novel which is almost identical in plot to one of Walker Percy's novels, Lancelot. It's a Gothic story, but it has the same kind of issue raised about the relationship of a man to his wife and a depressive who has violent feelings of jealousy and lives in a cell.
And you're suggesting that the inspiration, the motivation for this book is not to use the word Gothic itself, some sort of hidden supernatural machinery, but it's again in the genes that there is a...
Well, the issue is there.
Uh-huh.
The issue of depression, and one of the things I found fascinating that helps to hold the book together, at least I hope it will, is the nature of the family arrow in time, as Natalie Davis calls it. That is, there is in every family, I think, a sense of its own past, a legend that they might build up about themselves, that helps them to identify the goals of the group as a whole. In this case, I found that what was interesting was this problem of coping, of course, with depression on the one hand, and achieving stature locally and power, and of being of civic benefit to the community.
Now, are these antidotes? I mean, they antidotes? Are they compensatory elements? What?
That's right. I think in part they are, but all of the main characters, all the main leaders of each generation, I think, were searching for stability and authority because of this issue of depression. And so there was a constant search, you might say, for a father.
Mm.
And I don't mean that in exactly Freudian terms, but simply that the father is the symbol of what they would like to, the place they would like to get, in a way. Because so often the father had either died early or committed suicide. And so there's got to be some sort of substitute or some kind of a goal.
What does what does this saga of the Percy family have to tell us about the South today?
Well, I think that the Percys represent a counter trend on that score. I think that they are trying to uphold the best that the South had to offer in many respects, and certainly you find this in Walker Percy's novels, his hostility towards the commercialism, the middle class, rather. Hedonistic style. And one of the things that I really should emphasize, too, is religion. The Percys, not all of them were religious, of course, But Walker certainly has been.
And now, he's Episcopalian?
No, he's a Catholic.
He's a Catholic.
And, of course, living in Louisiana, that is perhaps less unusual than it would be in other parts of the South. But he was a convert. The family, though, has had a tendency, an orientation towards the Catholic faith. But Catholicism has a record, or I wouldn't call it a doctrine, but it certainly does go back to St. Augustine, of hostility towards suicide, not burying the suicide
in
the
sacred
ground and so on.
The moral stigma.
But I don't think that really gets at the heart of it. I think that is a help. But I think there is something within the Catholic sense of order, liturgy, and the understanding that living in the world is a way to God, can be a way to God through love, through human love of man and wife, for example.
It sounds like Graham Greene.
That's right. I think you'd find some very strong analogies in the writings of Greene and Walker Percy.
Is this book a form of therapy? I mean, for you as a scholar, do you aim it at your audience in that way? Is it descriptive or proscriptive?
I think maybe I'll take a leaf out of Walker Percy's own experience about this. he's very gracious in giving interviews to all and sundry, but generally he turns the questions to abstract issues and gives abstract answers. And I think that's fair enough for a writer to kind of hide some of his own.
Let's just put it out there and see what
happens.
That's
not to, but I'm sure you're quite right. I mean, one of the things I should say, and this is to generalize, perhaps in abstract, and make less personal your question, but one out of five Americans suffers from depression in the course of their lifetime, and 5% of the population has chronic depression. So when Walker Percy is writing his works, he's speaking to a very large audience, and the novels are themselves rather therapeutic. I had a historian friend of mine who wrote me not long ago that he had read The Moviegoer, which was Walker Percy's first novel, at a time when he was suffering from depression himself, and he said he felt that it was very consoling. Now, I don't know. I don't think I'm writing this book for therapeutic purposes, but I'm sure that there is something in my experience as a northern-born young kid who went to the South at the age of 8, found himself in a very strange environment, actually in the same town where Walker Percy's uncle, or rather his adoptive father, Will Percy, had a house.
Where was that?
This was in Sewanee, Tennessee.
Uh-huh.
And I grew up there, and I heard about Will Percy, who was very much admired, and certainly about Walker Percy when he lived there briefly in the post-war years. So I think there was a sort of a personal connection of sorts, but rather distant. I mean, certainly didn't know him at that time. But I think there is this general issue of depression, that we all do suffer at times from it. And I think the reason why I was interested in his novels and then became interested in his life was because I could understand something of the agonies and some of the humor that are exhibited by the heroes of Percy's novels.
Which of Walker Percy's novels is your favorite? And tell me very briefly why that is, for our listeners who may not know all of his fiction.
Well, I think that there are two that I am particularly fond of, rather than just one. Lancelot, I think, is his greatest novel. It is the darkest. It is a melancholic character that he portrays, a man who'd murdered his wife in a great explosion. But I find it one of the richest in terms of the Dostoevskian type of themes that he's dealing with, the nature of evil. And so I'm attracted to that particular novel. But I think in a lighter vein, but also a very, very serious novel, is The Last Gentleman. Will Barrett, the hero, suffers from epileptic forms of depression, has deja vu, amnesia, twitches and muscle spasms and so on. And the reason for this, as we find out in the course of the novel, is that he cannot or has not yet come to terms with the fact that his father had committed suicide. And of course, this comes out of Walker Percy's own personal experience. But I think that it is a wonderful novel in its subtlety and in its ability to convey the essence of Southern culture itself. Many of the characters, just with a turn of a phrase, he can open up what you feel about the Southern experience.
Well, briefly, in a word or two, Bert Brown, are you sympathetic to Walker Percy? If you had to back to the wall there?
What I think is remarkable about the family is their ability to have handled this problem. Hmm. Now, all right, so several of them, and in fact one every generation, committed suicide. But that, I don't think, is to be taken out of context and to be made sensational. Because we have to remember that these individuals were extremely successful, made tremendous contributions to society before something overcame them and they did what they did. But I think that the genetic aspect of it helps to make us understand that better.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You've been listening to a conversation with Bertram Wyatt Brown of the University of Florida. During his fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, Bert Wyatt Brown is at work on a project entitled The Percy Legend, Depression, Honor, and Creativity in a Southern Family. Soundings is available on cassette. Send $5 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Ask for program number 497. The address again is the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip is 27709. When writing, please mention the call letters of this radio station. Next week on Soundings, a discussion about philosophy and cognition. My guest will be Louise Antony of North Carolina State University. Soundings concludes now with Timeline, a weekly cultural retrospective. The American Civil War formally concluded 125 years ago this week when General Robert E. Lee surrendered to General Ulysses S. Grant. Concurrently, the country's 16th president, Abraham Lincoln, died at the hands of John Wilkes Booth. The second week in April 1939 marked an open-air concert in the nation's capital given by the black contralto Marian Anderson to an audience of 75,000. The Daughters of the American Revolution had earlier denied the singer the use of Constitution Hall. During the second week of April 1934, scientists atop Mount Washington, New Hampshire, recorded the strongest natural winds ever observed on the surface of the Earth. They clocked gusts reaching 231 miles per hour. The second week in April marks the birthday of W.C. Fields, the American stage and film star, whose real name was Claude William Dukenfield. He was born in 1879. Frances Perkins, the first female member of a presidential cabinet, was born in early April 1880. She served as Secretary of Labor under FDR. And America's third president, Thomas Jefferson, was born in early April 1743. Finally, the writer Eudora Welty and the historian Arnold Toynbee have birthdays this week. Eudora Welty in early April 1909, and Arnold Toynbee in 1889. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Support for Soundings comes from the A.J. Fletcher Foundation and from the National Endowment for the Humanities. The Percy Legend, Depression, Honor, and Creativity in a Southern Family, this week on Soundings. Listen for Bertram Wyatt Brown, a historian from the University of Florida. Bert Wyatt Brown discusses his study of the family of the novelist Walker Percy. The Percy Legend, Depression, Honor, and Creativity in a Southern Family. Some answers and insights this week on Soundings.